The remote hearing of the Capital Investment and Transportation Finance and Policy Committees for December 14th, 2021 is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance with House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. This is an informational hearing and no official actions will be taken. As is custom, all committee discussion and questions will go through the chairs. To request recognition, please use the raise hand function. And then members, I do want to note that the meeting is blocked until 4 p.m. if additional time is needed beyond the standard 90 minutes. With that, I'll turn it over to Chair Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate very much everybody coming today. This is a rare but important joint meeting of the Capital Investment and Transportation Finance and Policy Committees in the Minnesota House. And it is important that we gather to really, for the first time, begin to address and discuss and process a bill of real historic import. As I was thinking about today, Mr. Chairman, I thought about this bill in the broader context of some of the great and transformative generational federal bills that have passed. And this is really on par with the Emergency Relief Appropriation Act of 1935. That was the New Deal era bill that established the Works Progress Administration that was responsible for so much infrastructure, from schools to highways to bridges to parks to tree planting, Chairman Hansen. Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956 gave us the interstate highway system in both its positives and negatives. And I think that as we go through this latest bill, we need to learn from some of the mistakes of that bill. As you know, we talked a lot in the Transportation Committee this year about the impacts on Rondo and Black communities around the country that were impacted by the interstate highway system. But that bill was transformative, and we deal with its legacy in both the positive and the negative to this day. So in 2021, we have the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, and that is what we're talking about today. And when we think about this, it is one of a trio of bills that I think will be remembered over the last 100 years as truly transformative in American history and truly transformative, generational, in fact, in terms of our investment and commitment to our country's infrastructure. So, you know, with that, this is really, members, kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for us as legislators to be part of this history. To really understand its implications for our state, what role that we as legislators have in implementing it locally. And that is really the goal here of our hearing. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back over to you. We have a number of speakers and guests and opportunities for Q&A. And Mr. Chair, I think you'll just go over that, and thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act include transportation, broadband, water, energy, disaster mitigation and resiliency, and cybersecurity. And members, as Chair Hornstein stated, transportation is the biggest component. And so today we'll be hearing a presentation from Mr. Ben Hoosh, who is a federal affairs advisor with the National Conference of State Legislature. We have allocated 30 minutes for his presentation, 15 minutes for the presentation, followed by 15 minutes for Q&A. And with that, Mr. Hoosh, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Great. Thank you so much, Chair Lee. And for the record, my name is Ben Hoosh with the National Conference of State Legislatures, Federal Affairs Advisor for Natural Resources and Infrastructure. And I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Just making sure everyone can see the presentation.
Great. Please proceed.
All right, so good afternoon, Chair Hornstein, Chair Lee, members of the Transportation Finance Committee, Capital Investment Committee. I just wanna say at the start, thank you so much for the opportunity to present today on the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And as I stated earlier, I serve as the Federal Affairs Advisor for Natural Resources and Infrastructure for the National Conference of State Legislatures. I've been with NCSL for about 10 years, coming up on my 10-year anniversary. All right. I want to be cognizant of our limited time here today, so I'll be focusing on transportation. Obviously, the bill is historic in nature. It's 2,700 pages, so I'm obviously not going to be able to cover everything in detail in only 15 minutes, but of course, happy to answer questions today or in the future. Additionally, you know, we will be focusing on transportation today, but of course the bill covers, you know, what we identify as six kind of core infrastructure areas. So additionally, broadband, water, energy, disaster mitigation, and cybersecurity. And NCSL is happy to provide any information that you or members of the committee may have. All right. So to start, let's kind of take a quick bird's eye view. And this is what I think, at least, is a helpful graphic from the New York Times. And it really kind of shows the difference between the total amount of funds in different areas. And this is specifically referring to the new funds. So oftentimes you'll hear the bill as a, you know, $1 trillion infrastructure bill or a $550 billion infrastructure bill. And that is just in reference to whether or not the funding is new, which is about $550 billion, or the total value of the package, which is about $1 trillion, because some of the funding in the bill is just an extension of existing programs. Now, before I get into those specific dollars and cents, I think it's important to kind of set a baseline and explain a little bit of the background on existing federal funding for transportation. I apologize if this is a repeat of some, but generally the federal government attempts to pass multi-year reauthorization bills for, you know, the gamut of transportation modes. So surface transportation, aviation, water transportation, but, you know, within those, surface transportation, you know, so roads, transit, rail, is significantly larger than the other ones. And so for surface transportation, prior to the infrastructure bill being passed last month, Congress last passed a five-year reauthorization in 2015 entitled the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, or just commonly referred to as the FAST Act. In 2020, Congress extended the FAST Act for another year as the chambers were unable to reach an agreement on a reauthorization. In October of this year, they actually extended it for another month when they, again, were unfortunately unable to reach an agreement on authorization. But jumping back to the spring of this year, the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, commonly just referred to as the Senate EPW Committee, they approved unanimously the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Act of 2021, or just referred to by its acronym as SCRA. Now, you might be wondering, why am I talking about a bill passed by a single Senate committee? Well, as you may or may not be aware, this infrastructure bill that is now law actually began in the U.S. Senate. And when it moved to the House, it actually there were no changes made to the bill. So the surface transportation provisions of the law match the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Act passed by the Senate EPW Committee very closely. And I mention that because the STRA, when it was passed by the Senate EPW Committee, or as it's included in the infrastructure law, is a very strong bill for states. And I'm going to go over that in a moment. But specifically, it provides a significant percentage of its funding in formulas to states rather than either competitive grants or direct grants to local governments. And it includes substantially less new requirements on that spending compared to the bill that was passed by the House, but of course did not become law. Okay, so let's get to the numbers. Earlier, I showed you that graphic noting the new funding for roads and bridges would be about $110 billion. But when you look at total funding, so new with existing, you're actually looking at about $350 billion just for roads and bridges and highways. On the right side, you'll see kind of a chart that shows state by state. And I realize that it might look a little small, so I apologize for that. I tried to circle the Minnesota numbers specifically. The federal aid highway program is made up primarily of kind of a few core programs that provide funds to states. You know, it's generally, you know, in reality, works more as a reimbursement process, with each of those programs having different goals. Though, of course, there is some overlap and states can transfer a small amount of funds. But to get back to the chart, The reason I included this chart, why I really like it, is it really shows the significant increase in federal aid highway funds that this bill provides in FY22 compared to FY2021. So in just 1 year, we would see approximately a 20% increase in just year one. And then from year one to year two and so on and so forth, those increases average just over 2%. So over the life of a bill, we are looking at about a 30% increase that this bill provides to states compared to the FAST Act. However, what this chart does not include are some of the new formula programs that are actually outside the Federal Aid Highway Program. One of the big ones you may have heard of is a $40 billion bridge program. So this new $40 billion bridge program has both a formula and a competitive portion to it. Formula being funds that are sent to states, competitive being ones that states and or local governments have to apply for. Thankfully, the formula portion is much larger at about $27.5 billion, with the competitive portion at about $12.5 billion. The amount that Minnesota will get depends upon the conditions of your bridges and the repair that or replacement that those bridges will require. So in addition to the new bridge program, there's also a new $5 billion National Electric Infrastructure Program, which will provide funding for the implementation of EV charging infrastructure and the creation of a kind of interconnected network to facilitate data collection access with regards to EV charging. Two other formula programs I want to mention is a new PROTECT program, and that's the acronym is PROTECT. There's a long way of spelling it out, but as I'm sure you can guess, that program, which again is a formula program, is geared towards protecting surface transportation infrastructure and the resiliency of that infrastructure. The next program I want to mention is a carbon reduction program. That is another new formula program that provides funds to states for, you guessed it, to help reduce carbon emissions. So that would help fund projects such as traffic management, public transit, and many others. So when you combine the Formula Bridge program, this new EV charging infrastructure program with the Federal Aid Highway program, you begin to get a sense of kind of how much Minnesota will receive. And I in this chart, Minnesota's the last line there, but I included some other states to kind of highlight the differences between the states. But the reason I say that's the minimum that the state would receive is that, of course, the state can apply, and as I'm sure the commissioner can talk about, apply for competitive grant programs that would provide additional funds to states, to the state of Minnesota, excuse me. For public transit, the primary point I want to point out are both the scale of the investment. So that first chart that I included showed about $40 billion in new transit funding. But if you look at the total in the bill, it's just about $90 billion, which to my recollection is the largest ever investment in public transit. The second thing that I want to make sure that you all take away from this is it's important to know that federal funding for public transit operates on a different structure than federal funding for roads, highways, and bridges. And that is because the way public transit funding operates is much more, though not exclusively, on a federal to local stream. So while for highways, roads, and bridges, you have a much more federal to state stream. So to maybe give a little bit of color to that, the largest program run by states, and I should say the largest public transit program run by states, is the Rural Transit Program. And that receives about $4.5 billion, whereas some of the other Federal Transportation Administration or Federal Transit Administration, excuse me, programs that are geared in the federal to local stream are your urbanized area, your state of good repair. And as you can see, those programs are substantially larger than the programs that are more based in the state, in the federal to state funding stream. Okay, now I want to move on to passenger rail. So the amount of funding included in this bill for passenger rail is substantial. $66 billion in total that is split between the Northeast Corridor, or what is generally Washington, D.C. to Boston, and then the national network, which is more or less everything else outside of that. So of this $66 billion, Amtrak would receive directly $22 billion, $6 billion of which for the Northeast Corridor, $16 billion for the national network. Now, the largest pool, that $36 billion you see there, is a competitive program. So states can apply for that, local governments can apply for that, regions can apply for that, but Amtrak can also apply for those funds as well. It's the Federal Partnership for Intercity Passenger Rail Grants. So that is, you know, a huge sum of money that is available to states, local governments, and Amtrak for passenger rail upgrades. There's an additional $5 billion program. It's another competitive program that's geared a little bit more towards rail safety. So the last two items I'll mention fairly quickly. First one we'll start with is airports or aviation. So the big, you know, in total, airports will receive about $25 billion. The biggest portion of that is $15 billion in formula funding for the Airport Improvement Program. This is not necessarily a formula that goes to states, but it's a formula that goes directly to airports and is based on kind of the combination of the number of flights, the number of passengers served, but it provides funding to thousands of airports nationwide. In addition, there's also $5 billion for airport terminal development and $5 billion for Federal Aviation Administration facilities. Lastly, I want to mention, because I think it's important and it's especially important for the state of Minnesota, are the funds directed to the inland waterway system. So for water transportation infrastructure, although we don't necessarily see these funds flow kind of to state governments, you know, as I mentioned, these funds are important for the state of Minnesota and for, you know, the economy in general. So the inland waterway system would receive just over $9.5 billion, with about half of that for construction of previously authorized projects. So a quick aside, if you remember a few slides ago, I talked about how every few years Congress tries to pass different authorization bills for kind of your different transportation modes, so water, surface. The Water Resources Development is actually a bill that Congress attempts to pass every 2 years, and lately they have done that. But generally what they have done is they have authorized more projects than the bill itself has funded. So jumping back to this infrastructure bill, what that $5 billion is for is to construct projects that were actually previously approved, but in being approved, did not receive funding. So you also have $4 billion for maintenance and then $300 million specifically for Mississippi River projects. In addition to the inland waterway system, there's about $6 billion, just a little bit over, for ports, and that is both water ports and land ports.
You're still hiding.
Okay, so before I close, this is my last slide, I want to mention one item that might be a little bit in the weeds, and I think it's only likely to be a short-term issue, but it's important to understanding this bill and generally how federal surface transportation funding works. So although the bill includes over $500 billion for all transportation modes, about $350 for roads, highways, and bridges, 90-ish for transit, the funds, most of those funds are only authorized. They are not technically appropriated. Some of the funds in the bill were appropriate. Now, I'll get to those in a sec, as you can see on my slide. But the reason I mention this is because you may have seen a couple weeks ago, Congress passed a continuing resolution. They did not pass an FY22 omnibus. And so that continuing resolution, which continues FY21 levels forward until February 14th, means a majority of the funding that was included in this bill for states is not technically available to them yet. Some of it is. So the bridge program, the EV charging infrastructure, the passenger rail. And the reason that is available is because of the way the bill was structured. Some of the programs received advanced appropriations. Some of them only received authorization. So my expectation is that the funds that were authorized in this bill will receive funding in February when the CR ends. But I do want to point that out for your understanding. And I actually think it's not necessarily the worst thing, because I do think it provides states and really anyone receiving those funds with a bit of time to learn about the bill, and more importantly, to plan how you want to make use of this increased investment. So I will kind of conclude there. That's my very quick intro to transportation, but of course I'd be happy to take any questions either now or, as I said, later. So thank you again for the opportunity to present.
Thank you, Mr. Hush. First up is Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. One is in relation to all this new funding. I just want to make sure that we clarify, is any of this from the normal federal gas tax that's collected and reapportioned back to Minnesota, or is this all new dollars? And the second one refers to competitive bids or competitive matching funds. So if you could answer the first question first, I appreciate that.
Mr. Hush.
Sure, and thank you so much for the question. So the federal gas tax funds, what I would say, are most of the surface transportation investments, not all of them. And actually, this has been going on for some time now. The federal government spends more on surface transportation than the federal gas tax brings in. So one of the things that this bill did, kind of separate from everything I just described, was it authorized a transfer of, I believe, around $110 billion from the federal general fund to the highway trust fund. And the highway trust fund is kind of where the federal aid highway program or what funds federal aid highway program. And so it is the trust fund that helps reimburse states. So the funds will technically come from the highway trust fund, but the reason that the trust fund remains in the black is because the bill authorized a general fund transfer of over $100 billion. And then you had a second question on competitive grants.
Yeah, well, just if I could follow up with that question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question still is these appropriation, this new funding that we're getting, it sounds to me like you just said that basically it's still coming from the trust fund and is still basically funded through the gas tax dollars as well. And there's only just $100 billion or so that are put into that fund. Am I correct in understanding that, or are most of these dollars new dollars?
Mr. Hush.
So it is, I would, if you know, to speak plainly, I would say both. It is new dollars in the sense of the amount of funding the bill authorizes. And in order to allow for that increased amount, the bill also authorized a transfer of $100 billion plus dollars from the general fund to the highway trust fund. So to provide a bit more detail, generally, the federal government, and this is just on surface transportation, specifically with more or less to the federal aid highway program, spend about $15 billion more per year than the highway trust fund takes in. I don't want to say just the gas tax, because there are other revenues for the trust fund. So I'll stop there in case you have any follow-ups.
Representative Petersburg, last follow-up before we move on.
Okay, well then I'll switch over to the other question, which was in regards to these, and I think you had the bridge bill in which we needed to have matching funds. Do you know what the matching fund is for those matching funds, and is any of the other surface transportation dollars also tied into any matching funds from the state, and what would that be as well?
Mr. Hurst.
So specific to the bridge program, my understanding is it's 80% federal government, 20% state. And that is, it does differ, depending upon the specific project and the specific federal program you're operating under. But the 80-20 cost share is a good general premise to go on.
Thank you, Mr. Hush. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll follow up on my, I was also going to ask about that local match, which he just raised. And so is that true of all of the, local roads and bridges, transit, waterways, et cetera, are they all 80-20, the local match?
Just the most.
No, it definitely differs, especially when you get outside of the federal aid highway program. On transit, it's much more likely to be 100% federal share. And there are some programs even within the federal aid highway program that are 100%. So maybe an example, if I could offer, from this bill, the bill created a new program. It's a competitive program that would provide funding to applicants to improve improve access for pollinators to kind of habitats along the side of highways. And that if the state of Minnesota or a local government received a grant through that program, that is a 100% federal share. So no match would be required from the recipient of that grant.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So mine is more than response to this. I don't want us to miss $1 of that federal money, because the more we qualify for the federal money, the more pressure it takes off of all of those other good things we want to do for the state. And so I want to be very clear about the dollar amounts needed and the timing. When do those various things have to happen? And then if it requires legislative authorization, here's what I plead with our leadership. We have a very bad habit that we've developed where leaders think they have more power if they hold all the big questions to the end and it all gets traded off in some kind of final deal in May, and then maybe we run out of time. I plead with us not to do that. The moment it's clear to us what money has to be set aside and what the timeline is and does it require legislative authorization, that we have a separate bill dealing just with that, and we move that quickly. We don't let it get mucked up in a last minute deal where everything gets traded off with everything else, because that hasn't been serving us very well. So that's more a statement, I guess, than anything. I just want to be certain that we qualify for every dollar of federal money so that it enables us to do lots of other good things.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a question. I just wanted to acknowledge and let folks know that we have Chairman Scott Newman and Ranking Member Scott Dibble from the Senate on the call with us, and I certainly would invite them to ask questions and participate as they please. So we welcome our friends from the Senate to the hearing, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is kind of teasing out the information on the ports, and if that is, if there's legislative involvement needed there, and I wasn't clear on the matching for ports, can a port authority apply directly, or does that come into the Department of Transportation where they would apply for those funds? So if Mr. Hush could maybe just describe that. I believe it's a port trust fund, and how ports in Minnesota could access that. And just again, I think my memory heard that you just talked about a pollinator highway, and that's within the executive branch's authority to seek that money. Is that correct?
Mr. Hush.
So to answer, Representative Hansen, answer those questions in reverse. Yes, if the funding for the pollinator program is a competitive program, so it is at the discretion of the U.S. Department of Transportation, obviously depending upon the number of applications they receive. I believe the maximum amount for each grant is $150,000. The program itself receives, I believe, $2 million annually. So, you kind of do the math there. At most, a minimum of about 15, 14-ish grants per year, though obviously more if they go lower than the maximum number. The first question about ports. I think the trust fund you're referring to maybe might be the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund, though I'm not, I don't want to misstate there. But if I can actually get back to you on that specific question, because I think I know the answer, but I don't want to misspeak in a public forum such as this.
Chair Hansen, last follow-up so we can move on.
That's okay. Get back to me.
So. Thank you, Chair Hansen. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, I want to echo Representative Hausman's concerns that we know as soon as possible what the match is going to be, so that if we do need authorization from our legislature, that we can do that. But also of Mr. Hush, a specific question. I see $27 billion, I think, in the program for bridges. I just want to make sure we're local bridges, not state bridges, fit into this. Are they in that pot of money or under the competitive grant program? Where do the local bridges fit in?
Sure. So two parts to that. Local bridges can definitely apply for the competitive portion of that $12.5 billion. But to the funding that goes to states, my understanding is up to 15% of the amount the state of Minnesota would get can be used for what are known as, or my understanding is they are known as off-system bridges. So generally bridges off the national highway system, which is more than just the interstate system, the national highway system. And so those bridges, specifically those off-highway bridges, the federal share for those projects is actually 100%.
Representative Erdahl.
It's a little bit different than your interstate or your, what the term highway generally implies.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Mr. Hush, it's good to see you. A couple of quick questions. One regarding Amtrak. You displayed the Amtrak map, but you also mentioned Amtrak would be competing for funds. How many of those projects on the map are certain, guaranteed, and how many are kind of hanging in the balance?
Mr. Hush.
So I would say I do not know how many are guaranteed. I would say that map specifically is what Amtrak, what they hope they can accomplish. But I don't want to speak for them in terms of what would be guaranteed versus what may or may not happen, depending upon the amount of funding that they receive from that $36 billion pool, because they are going to definitively get $22 billion. But there's that larger pot of $36 billion, which states, local governments, and Amtrak can apply for. So I would say that it depends on the total amount of funding that they get.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then on a separate area, Mr. Hush, you mentioned that the amount states get is somewhat dependent on the condition of their infrastructure. Can you give us a little more information about that and how it might affect Minnesota in particular?
Mr. Hush. Sure. So the I believe they are like those numbers and dollars are already known. It was on that slide. I think it's maybe slide 5 or 6. But generally, the way the program works is based on the number of bridges that need to be replaced, the state would get a certain amount. And then added to that are the number of bridges that would only need to be or are in need of repair. And so they would get every state would get slightly less money for those. But the system of bridges nationwide is fairly well cataloged. And so I believe the amount the state of Minnesota is already known. I don't want to share my screen again, but if you look, I believe on it's maybe like slide 6 or 7, the last line there will show you the amount that the state of Minnesota is set to receive from that bridge program.
Representative Torkelson, last follow-up.
I'm done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Mr. Hush, I just have one quick question for you, and then we'll transition over. Do we know, are there any guidance on the $300 million that you have listed for the Mississippi River?
I have not seen any, but I can definitely double check afterwards and get back to you as I follow up also with Representative Hansel on his question.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hush. So before we turn it over to Chair Hornstein and MnDOT, I think this is for the commissioner or for MnDOT. Kind of following up on Representative Torkelson's question, I would like to know if we have a list of those bridges that are rated as poor or fair. If we could get that list, I think that would be great. Thank you, and Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hush, for that very, very thoughtful and thorough overview. And members, you can always feel free to access the resources of the NCSL. They've been a wonderful, nonpartisan national resource for all of us. So thank you so much again, Mr. Hush, for your overview, and we appreciate your time. And I know in your preparation for this visit with us, this virtual visit with us. Now, members, I'd like to turn this over. We're going to hear from MnDOT now until about 3:15 p.m. There are several MnDOT speakers, and we'll kick it off with Commissioner Anderson Kelleher. Thank you so much, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, for being with us. And again, your presentation will be so important to all of us as we look forward to partnering with you and moving this legislation forward locally here in Minnesota. So welcome to the committee.
Well, good afternoon, Chairman, and good afternoon, members of both committees, as well as members of the Senate, Chairman Newman, and Ranking Member Senator Dibble. I'm glad to be with you today. And I will first say that we have a team of people who are going to be presenting. I will start the presentation, and then I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, our budget director, Josh Knatter-Hubinger, who will do a portion of the presentation. And then Mr. Radin will join us and do a portion of the presentation. We will try to answer some of the questions that have been raised during Mr. Hush's presentation. I thought he did an excellent job, by the way, and it really helped set up. I think it'll help us move through our presentation quite smoothly. So first and foremost, the IIJA, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, and I have to say, Representative Murphy, sometimes this acronym feels like a Finnish word that I just can't say. So I'm working on this. There's a couple of things you'll hear about this bill going forward. One is that it's also referred to as a bill, the bipartisan infrastructure law. And we are going to today use IIJA as our way of referring to the bill. This bill really, this law transforms the federal and state transportation partnership to include new aspects of the definition of transportation, including carbon reduction, climate resiliency, restorative justice, broadband, and electric vehicle infrastructure that now go into the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Framework. This is a five-year reauthorization law, so which it really helps departments like Minnesota's Department of Transportation and other agencies do better planning for long-range projects. Josh, we can move to the next slide. So, IIJA is an authorization act. You heard about this. The funds still need to be appropriated by Congress. And all funding figures at this time are estimates. So there's going to be both a finer point put on these numbers, as well as additional guidance coming from the U.S. Department of Transportation in the coming weeks and months. We also do need legislative budget authority for most of these funds, and we appreciate your attention to this issue and really appreciate both Representative Hausman and Representative Erdahl's conversation around that. We are also working to engage stakeholders on a state and local funding split. We have a historic split that we use at MnDOT. We are having conversations, and I'll talk about that, or we'll talk about a little bit at the end, the opportunities for input. And I just want to share that we did go out to the U.S. Capitol in September of 2021, and this is a picture of our MnDOT team with U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar. We met with every single member of the delegation on that trip and had really wonderful conversations about the priorities for this bipartisan piece of legislation. We can move to the next slide. So Mr. Hush got into this a little bit, and this is the comparison of the FAST Act to the IIJA formula funding program. The chart represents the estimated formula funding coming to Minnesota. It does not include those discretionary funds like grants and the National Competitive Solicitation Programs. Over the next 5 years, the total amount, that's the total amount, is estimated to be at $4.8 billion. IIJA is an authorization act replacing the FAST Act. So besides providing new funds, it also funds existing transportation programs and investments that have been already identified in the 4-year State Transportation Investment Program and the 10-year CHIP program. And the dark blue on, I like to call these the Pac-Man slides, the dark blue and green represents the amount of IIJA that's needed to cover MnDOT and local federal aid investments already identified in the STIP. The makeup of that is about 75% of the IIJA formula funds. MnDOT and local agencies are currently developing projects for about $3.6 billion currently. The orange in this, in the large pie chart, represents the new formula funding programs in IIJA. Mr. Hush talked about this. These programs make up about $600 million, or about 12% of the total formula funds coming to Minnesota under IIJA. The new programs include, and these are formula programs, carbon reduction, resiliency, also known as PROTECT, additional bridge investments, as you were discussing, and yes, we can provide the list of the bridges in poor and fair condition to the entire committee, and then electric vehicle charging. IIJA also projects about a $640 million increase in the existing program. Historically, existing programs have been shared between MnDOT and local agencies and are eligible to receive federal funds. The chart for program for projects that can receive those federal funds. The chart shows an estimated distribution of the increased funding for existing programs based on the historical average and distribution between state and local governments. So we're going to present this information in another way on the next slide. And this is, again, the same information presented in a different way, knowing that people sometimes can take it in a different way of looking at it. So this bar chart, the two bar charts next to each other, really show you that the increase in the funding on the bar chart on the right of your screen, the IIJA funding level, is the three bars at the top on the right. That is the new funding. So that is the increase to the state roads, the local share, as well as that IIJA programs that are going to come through the formula. Now, I am going to finish up with this slide. Folks on transportation finance and maybe on capital investment are aware that MnDOT has a family of plans where we are working with local partners, with stakeholders to develop this set of plans, the 20-year plan, the 10-year plan, the 4-year plan. And I want to tell you that because I think it's important that those frameworks, MnSHIP, the 20-year plan, as well as the STIP and the Capital Highway Investment Plan, can give us some part of a roadmap of where we might go to with the IIJA funding. However, it has not been determined which specific projects will advance beyond possibly some ideas we have about this first fiscal year, since we are going to be in the construction season very soon. I know it's snow and ice, but we actually, our work for planning is already well underway for next construction season. And so we really want to work with our local partners and other stakeholders on how specific projects can advance with funding from IIJA. The Mentorship Program, or the Mentorship Plan, the 20-year plan, investment plan, is that level currently exceeds MnDOT's fiscally constrained state transportation investment program. The additional funding from IIJA helps MnDOT's capital program begin to close that gap. And the CHIP program, the Capital Highway Investment Program, CHIP, details MnDOT's plans for the next 10 years. Projects in years 5 to 10 of CHIP are not commitments until they actually reach the state transportation investment plan, and that is the STIP. But it's likely that some of the projects in years 5 through 10 of the CHIP could be advanced with this IIJA funding. And projects in the STIP may also still have funding gaps due to inflation, due to a number of different factors. One option is to use much of the funding of IIJA just to fund that STIP program. But again, no decisions have been made. It's giving you options to understand our planning cycle and where we're at. The agency anticipates extensive public engagement and conversations with local officials, state officials like you, as well as stakeholders, community-based organizations, about how Minnesotans would like to see this money prioritized in their communities. Because ultimately, transportation is really about connecting people together. And so talking to a broader group of folks is going to be very important as we move forward. I'm going to turn the presentation over at this point to my colleague at MnDOT, our budget director, Josh Kanatter-Hubinger, to take over the presentation at this point.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, Josh Kanatter-Hubinger, budget director here at MnDOT. I'm going to go through the numbers in a little bit more detail and also address that state and local match question that's been brought up a couple of times. So again, high level, like the commissioner mentioned, it's about $4.8 billion in this new IIJA bill over the 5 years of the bill in formula funds for road and bridge. That represents about a 30% increase overall over existing funding. It aligns directly with those pie charts and bar charts that you saw earlier. That's about a 20% increase for our existing core programs. And then it reflects a substantial increase for those four completely new programs, obviously. So the carbon reduction, Protect for Resiliency, the bridge program, and the EV infrastructure. And then, as has been mentioned, there are a variety of either expanded or completely new competitive grant programs that are eligible for state, local, and tribal governments to apply for. The bullets are just an illustrative list. There are a lot more. So there's $12.5 billion for a bridge investment program for nationally significant bridges. RAISE and infra, which already exist, have been expanded. Almost $30 billion potentially there. There's a new Safe Streets for All program at $5 billion. These are all national totals. A variety of grant programs for transit, $30-plus billion. And then also the $5 billion that was mentioned in the previous presentation for airports, as well as that additional $5 billion for terminals. So just a variety of grant programs out there. This is not an illustrative list. In total, well over $100 billion over the 5 years for those various competitive programs. And these have been mentioned again, some more of those multimodal type programs nationally. And airports for Minnesota, that number is about $300 million for the AIP, that airport improvement program portion going to airports in Minnesota. And that's over 5 years. All right. So what does that mean in terms of state and local match needs? So again, to reiterate, these are all estimates. These will likely change. This is to give a sense of magnitude for what we think the needs are. This is largely focused on those formula dollars where we have a little bit of a better sense of what this means. The challenging piece that we'll get to is obviously those large new discretionary programs that have a variety of matching needs, which we'll get to in a sec. So working through the various pots of money for roads and bridges, just on the formula side, so this is again connected to that $4.8 billion in total. That's about $240 million a year of new federal funds over our existing program levels. Again, that's in that 30%+ range. Based on that historical precedent of MnDOT receiving about 70% of the money for the trunk highway system and our local partners getting about 30% of the money for the local road system, that translates to roughly $170 million a year for MnDOT. So that would ultimately go to the trunk highway fund for the trunk highway system, and then another $70 million to our local partners. On the match side, we're using that kind of simplistic 80-20 split, 80% federal, 20% state or local. That obviously varies within specific programs. In some cases, that federal match is actually much lower. In some cases, it's closer to 90 or even 100%, as has been mentioned. But we're largely sticking with 80-20 just for the math for these calculations. So just for formula funds for roads and bridges, that would mean that match need for the trunk highway system for MnDOT, about $40 million a year, and then $20 million a year for local partners. So add that up, that's about $60 million of need in state and local match for these formula funds just for roads and bridges. In the modal areas, for aeronautics, again, for that $300 million over the next 5 years, that's $60 million a year in federal funds. I'm here typically, for FAA funds, it's 90-10. And so that 10% state and local match need here would be in that range of $7 million a year. For transit, I know Met Council is giving a presentation. So this is just the portion flowing through MnDOT for Greater Minnesota Transit. It's about $13 million a year of additional federal funds, about a $7 million match need here. Just want to call out for these. The match needs do vary quite a bit. For the capital side of things, it's 80-20 federal, but for operating grants, it's actually 50-50. And so that's why that state and local match is a little higher for the transit portion. And then just for illustrative purposes, we're kind of throwing out a number. So of that 100 plus billion dollars of competitive grant programs, assuming Minnesota being somewhat average and getting 2% of that total over each year, and then assuming that same 80-20 split, that could mean $100 million or more for the state or local match alone. And this is the exact same information in chart form, kind of rolls things up quite nicely. So again, about almost $800 million of additional federal funds coming to Minnesota, that comes with almost $200 million of additional state and local match needs. And again, just want to really caveat that discretionary number. That is a rough guesstimate based on Minnesota receiving about 2%. Obviously, for some programs, we might make out very well and receive a significant portion of a specific grant program, and in other cases might receive next to nothing. So again, this is just assuming a rough 2% of most of those discretionary programs. But again, you can see that sizable federal funds comes with sizable state and local match needs. And this will look familiar to those in the Transportation Committee. This is just to remind people, this is looking at the state revenue side of the equation for transportation. So this is looking at the highway user tax distribution history over the last 30 plus years. The blue bars are just the nominal revenue coming in for transportation through that HUTD fund. You can see the bar charts that's been growing quite significantly. Over the years, we've highlighted some of those significant funding packages or changes over time. Chapter 152 after the 35W bridge collapse back in 2008, those additional general fund transfers in 2018. But when you take that same revenue and adjust it for the inflation that MnDOT experiences on the construction side of things, so not the Consumer Price Index, the MnDOT's internal construction cost index. You can see that red bar cutting through, that red line cutting through. That's the inflation adjusted revenues on the state side coming to transportation. And when you adjust for inflation, we actually have not even been keeping up over the last 20 years. And so this new federal infusion will do a lot towards helping close that gap in terms of needs, but there are still sizable needs out there, inflation playing a big role in why that is. And I believe with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Rudin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and I'll try to get into a few more details across a few of the areas of focus within the bill, starting with the electric vehicle charging network funding. So we are estimating about $68 million for Minnesota for this program to install and maintain electric vehicle charging infrastructure. We will have to develop a plan on using that funding. And importantly, in this area, is that if states do not spend these funds, they will be redistributed to local governments. And if they're not able to use the funds, then the funds would actually be distributed to other states to use. So we do have some restrictions about private activities on public right-of-way. MnDOT does not actually want to own and operate these charging stations. We think that's a more appropriate activity for the private sector. But again, we might need to make some modifications to current restrictions on using public right-of-way for that type of activity. I should also mention that there's currently a restriction in state law about using trunk highway funds for public EV charging stations. And so that's something that we will probably be looking to address with you in the upcoming session. But we also have potentially other options for matching these funds, working with tribal governments, cities and counties, potentially even, you know, private utilities, and any of those contributions could count towards our local match for these funds. And so continuing on with resiliency, we do know that there is about $2.5 billion nationally for charging and fueling infrastructure and grants available. There's also, we're anticipating about $96 million for Minnesota over the five-year period of the bill for that formula carbon reduction program that was mentioned earlier. This is a program that is designed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector. And I think the goal is to reduce those by 65% over the five-year period. So that's a significant undertaking to be able to do that. Importantly here, states must develop a carbon reduction strategy within 2 years of implementation of IIJA. Switching now to equity, we know that there is $1 billion nationally for reconnecting communities. The Reconnect Rondo project that I know a lot of you are familiar with because the state legislature provided funding for that project this past session is a good candidate project. The U.S. Secretary of Transportation has actually talked about that project as an example of something that would be eligible for the Reconnecting Communities program. We also know that there's money for tribal nations that ties back to the resilience efforts in the bill. There's also a creation of a new office within U.S. Department of Transportation specifically to work with tribal governments. And some of that funding also flows through the Bureau of Indian Affairs at the federal level. But in Minnesota, you know, creating a plan for projects that really embody cultural change and working with our metropolitan planning organizations, again, tribes, local governments, to implement the equity provisions in the bill. I should say, too, that, you know, the equity efforts, although there are specific funds, for example, for the reconnecting communities, I think the emphasis is really, you know, to look at equity in every project that we do and try to incorporate equity provisions in that sort of livability framework on projects and, you know, asking kind of what is best for that community where the project is located. And so trying to take maybe a new approach to the way we develop projects and incorporating those equity provisions into our project development process is something that is a direction in the bill and something that we're definitely intending to make a key emphasis on projects moving forward. I'm going to talk just for a moment about bridges. So you've heard some of the bridge discussion already. The photo here is from the Blatnik Bridge in Duluth, which has had corrosion. You can see there, you know, some of the marks that have been made from bridge inspectors noting that corrosion. And we do our best to try to minimize the amount of corrosion through painting and so forth, but that's, you know, one example of a bridge project that we know is coming up that's going to have a significant cost to it, and certainly IIJA will help with that. So we're anticipating about $300 million just in this bridge formula program for Minnesota, and as was mentioned earlier, 15% of that actually would be for off-system bridges. Typically, those would be on the local road system. And also importantly, again, 100% federal funding for those bridges. So that, I think, is going to be a significant advantage for some of our local partners to help get some of their bridge needs addressed. In addition to those formula funds, there's also this $12.5 billion nationally significant bridge program that we would, again, for something like Blatnik, would be probably a good candidate for us to apply for once that opportunity becomes available. I would like to just point out that, you know, although this funding, again, is very helpful, and we're very grateful to the bipartisan vote in Congress and the president for proposing it, It doesn't eliminate or completely fill the gap on transportation funding. So just as an example, for the local bridge replacement program, which I know the Capital Investment Committee members are very familiar with, we estimate that we have 772 bridges over the next 5 years on that local system with an estimated need of $453 million. Additionally, there are historic bridges with an additional $54 million. And so, again, the bridge funding in IIJA is going to be very helpful, but is not expected to eliminate the need for something like the local bridge replacement program. Shifting to transit, you've heard a couple of folks mention the $820 million for transit. It is a significant increase, again, about a 30% increase that will help with things such as purchasing buses, other capital investment needs, station improvements for those transit systems that have fixed route transit. And then additionally, $21.3 billion for capital investment grants for transit. And then the next slide, some of the details about what we're anticipating. So currently, federal funds comprise about 30%, just under 30% of the Greater Minnesota Transit budget, and we anticipate that to grow to closer to 34%. From in 22, So you can see the different categories there, and I'll just quickly run through what those numbers signify. The 5311 program is for rural transit and inner city buses. 5339 is for bus and bus facilities. 5307 is the urbanized area formula grants. And 5310 is enhanced mobility for seniors and individuals with disabilities. And so you can see how we anticipate funding for each of those programs growing from our baseline funding to what we would anticipate in the first year of IMAJ. There's also some competitive programs that we would expect to be able to apply for, including for low and no emission buses. That's an existing program, but funding is increased to 5.7 or 5.6 billion nationally. And it also includes funding for facilities to accommodate those vehicles. And then the bus and bus facility program, $2 billion, and this is for, changes to buses, and we would anticipate that transit systems across Minnesota would compete for some of these funds as well. I'm going to shift now to talk about a few of the safety aspects of the bill. We've certainly had challenges with traffic safety here over the last couple of years. And so, I think that's one area that our federal partners are really hoping we can reemphasize is addressing crashes on our system. The Highway Safety Improvement Program is an existing program, but funding is increased by about $1.8 billion. Over the 5 years of the bill, that's a national number. And then there are some eligibility changes as well. So projects for education, research, enforcement, safe routes to school non-infrastructure spending is now eligible. Also traffic control devices for bicycles and pedestrians. And projects that actually separate bikes and peds from motor vehicle traffic are eligible through this program now. And then states will have to complete this vulnerable road user safety assessment to look at safety for vulnerable road users. The Safe Streets for All program was mentioned earlier. It's sometimes you hear it referred to as Vision Zero, or in Minnesota, we call it Toward Zero Deaths at the state level, although some local governments use that Vision Zero term. But this is a new competitive grant program that local governments, tribal governments, metropolitan planning organizations will be eligible for. And you can use the funds for planning grants, for doing safety action plans, to plan and design projects to increase safety, and then requires looking at whether a project will reduce or eliminate fatalities and injuries for, again, bicycles, pedestrians, transit users, and commercial vehicle operators, as well as motorists on the roadway. Also, an important safety program is the Rail Highway Crossing Program. This would be at $3 billion over the 5 years. Again, that's a national number. But once again, pedestrians are eligible for this funding. That's a clarification that Congress has passed. And also increases the amount that local governments can receive for closing an at-grade crossing from $7,500 to $100,000. That's, of course, one of the important ways to address safety at these railroad crossings. And Also importantly, the federal share for these types of projects goes up from 90% to 100%. And so that will help, especially I think at the local government level to maybe do these types of projects. The Federal Railroad Administration will have to annually summarize grade crossing action plans from each state and report that up to Congress as well. And then just a little on kind of where we're at and what's coming next. Of course, the bill was signed into law, but we're kind of in that public input discussion phase now, including importantly on what that state local funding split should be. And then we will, you know, need to have these funds appropriated by the state legislature, as well as hopefully some matching funds so that we can maximize these federal funds. And as was mentioned earlier, the federal continuing resolution expires on February 18th. And so certainly our hope is by then we will have the federal appropriations process completed. I should mention that Congress is also working on separate legislation referred to Build Back Better, which may have additional funds, especially in the area of transit and rail. And so that's something that we'll certainly be tracking as well. But additional work to do here, both at the state and federal level, before we get the full implementation. I did want to just briefly mention here in closing one public input opportunity. I think there are already a few legislators signed up for the Transportation Alliance event, which is just in 2 days on Thursday of this week at 11 a.m. There is a virtual registration option for anybody who wants to participate virtually. And you can sign up for that by going to transportationalliance.com. And that's an event that MnDOT is sort of co-sponsoring with the Minnesota Transportation Alliance to dive a little deeper into some of the details that we've shared today, as well as get some input from members of the public about what they think we should be prioritizing within the structure of IIJA and how we should be moving forward. So I think that completes our presentation, Mr. Chair, and we can try to address any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Udine, Mr. Natarud Hubinger, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, and I will take questions as they come up. And members, we have some time here. We could have up to about a half hour or so, I think, for questions, and then we'll bring on the Metropolitan Council. So I will call first on Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thank you for the presentation from the department. My question has to do with Corridors of Commerce, the ever-popular program originated by our illustrious chair. I know there are some discussions about how corridors may or may not move forward. My question is, would any of these federal funds be available to use in the corridors program?
Who from MnDOT would like to take that question?
Mr. Chair, I can take that question. I think that many of the Corridors of Commerce projects that already have been completed or are coming up for completion have multiple sources of funding in them. And actually, with the passage of the bill last year, and I know that that is not available until a little more work is done on the program, but that could be considered a state match to a federal grant program. So if that roadway is on the state system, then I think it would be a combination of funding. So it could be one of the ways we could definitely utilize and leverage federal dollars.
Representative Torkelson, did you have a follow-up?
Just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. It looks like the department is thinking about all the angles on these funds, and I appreciate that. very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, next up we have Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. First for certainly for Mindai is, do we have a rough idea of what the timeline and process would be for getting some of the funds that would be administered by MnDOT into the STIP?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Elkins, you're talking about the new dollars coming federally.
Yeah, new dollars, yeah.
So that is a little bit difficult since we don't have full appropriation and, you know, looking at what's happening, our earliest estimate of that right now is the February date and how quickly dollars would flow after that. And that's what I referred to earlier on when I said that, you know, we are doing a little bit of work at MnDOT about what could happen in the first fiscal year in terms of the dollars flowing in because it may be a very short turnaround time. And so there are a number of projects that are already underway or had to be, as I call them, divided out away from one another. They had to be put into different phases where those projects are maybe ideal candidates for year one of this funding with a lot of public input going forward into years two through five. And so I think that's partly how we're thinking about those resources is that there could be a very fast turnaround for the first year of the fiscal year. And I'll just ask if Eric or Josh would like to say more about that. But I think that kind of reflects our thinking at the moment.
And then the second question, I'll ask MnDOT because I didn't see any slides for it in the Met Council's presentation, but do we have a rough idea of how much additional money will be available to go into the regional solicitation? Basically, money for distribution through the MPO processes.
Mr. Chair, I can try to address that.
Mr. Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a bit early to estimate that. I think we would like to first have this conversation with our local partners about what should the state local split of these funds be. Historically, again, it's been about 70-30. But in the recent past, it was more about 75% MnDOT, 25% local. And so we've shifted that over the last few years. And we want to, I think, have a conversation about whether 70-30 is kind of the right level, or, you know, whether that needs some further adjustment. And so I think we would want to have that conversation first before we really get into the specifics for the type of discussion that you're talking about.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. My first question is I wanted to ask, what are MnDOT's plans to make sure that we increase the remaining service life on our trunk highway system as it relates to these funds?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bernardi and members of the committee, I think that one earlier version of the federal bill really directed departments of transportation to have a fix-it-first orientation towards these dollars. I think many of you are well aware that our system is a fiscally constrained system, and we really are already operating in a fix-it-first mode in Minnesota. So even if a project, I like to say this to folks, sometimes a project looks new and it's actually really the fixing of existing infrastructure. We're maybe able to fix that infrastructure in a way that gets more service out of it, provides better transportation options. But we really are in that mode in Minnesota that we are paying attention to our keeping the existing service life of a roadway as high as possible and going forward and being able to maintain that roadway. Now, I will say that the federal dollars, and certainly Josh can correct me if I'm not stating this the right way, those federal dollars cannot be used for maintenance and operations of our roadways. They are used for the capital. And so our state dollars are more important than ever in being able to maintain our roadways in a manner that is safe and efficient.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. And then my follow-up question is regarding to these funds and making sure that we just don't create bigger barriers faster. And I'm really glad to see the transportation and the addressing equity and working towards doing that. And also making sure that the voices of people in the community are heard, because, you know, the engineers are and planners can make great designs when they hear the voices of the community and what the needs are. And so I just want to make sure that that is foremost in the front of all this work, and that people can move about safely no matter what mode of transportation they use. And I know MnDOT has done a vision for a speed vision and addressing that. And I just want to make sure that's thought through really well, so that when we these projects happen, that we're not just perpetuating speeding problems that we have in the state, and that those are addressed up front in the design speed of our roadways. And it's not just status quo or this is what we've always done, that it's very, very intentional and thoughtful so we keep people safe on our roadways.
Mr. Chairman, I will say noted, Representative Bernardi. I mean, the safety of Minnesotans on our roadways is still the number one paramount issue for MnDOT and our partners in public safety. And there's certainly still work that can be done to help on the engineering and planning side. There's also a behavioral part of what's going on that many of my colleagues are working on to understand what we have experienced here with the highest level of crashes that are both fatal and life-changing in this year. And so, you know, we have to work at both sides of this, working with communities about how to engineer and design roads that are safe for all users. And that includes folks who are walking and riding bikes as well as driving, but then also the behavioral side of the science of what's happening in our society, particularly with speed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hoping that when we see those dollars to work, that we really see major improvements in how people move about safely. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. Next up, we have Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my question follows from that. It's, Commissioner, related to the Lafayette Freeway and the northern end of that, and checking if that the safety dollars or other pots of the IIJA funding can be used for fixing those safety problems on the north end of the Lafayette Freeway. Thank you.
Commissioner.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen. And we've had some conversations about the Lafayette Bridge and particularly the northern side of the Lafayette Bridge as it comes into the 94 westbound turn, and how MnDOT is currently looking at what can be done to both in the short term help folks who are driving have better cues and signaling of what is happening ahead of them and what the expectation is with that middle lane, but the long term is also we are looking at how to provide for a better and safer solution in that area. And so I think this is a good example of the type of project that is right now being looked at in terms of a longer term safety fix that could be eligible into the future for a number of programs, including the federal safety program. So we don't know all the details of these programs right now, and that's what makes the answering a bit difficult, is that we won't get a clear sight on particularly the competitive programs till probably early to mid next year, meaning early by the end of quarter one to quarter two. And so we can't really say, yes, this is a project that fits into this program. We have some ideas about things, and you've named a project that is important to many Minnesotans.
Thank you, Commissioner. Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you. We'd be happy to work with you.
Great. Thank you for that question, Representative Hansen. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, I believe, for Mr. Rudin, or maybe the commissioner. There was slide 15 referenced $216 million for climate adaption resiliency for tribal nations. And is that a competitive program? And if so, like, do they apply to the federal government, or do they work through MnDOT or a state agency? How does that work?
Anyone who from MnDOT wants to answer that one?
And Mr. Chair, this is Eric Rudin, and I believe that that is a formula program, but I will verify that and let you know. Typically, tribal funds do not flow through MnDOT. They would flow through, in many cases, the Bureau of Indian Affairs directly to tribal nations. But we can double check those details and get you some more information on that.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin. Representative West, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could just pop that in an email to me, that'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you for your question, Representative West. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair. Listening to Mr. Hoosh and listening to Commissioner Kelleher and Government Affairs Director Rudin and Mr. Hubinger and Natarud Hubinger, I got the impression that the IIJA was for the 5 years, and we should be just talking about the five-year coverage of this bill. And I know that there are so many things on the list for the Department of Transportation and public safety and all these things that we've talked about today, and they are so very, very important to Minnesotans. But I'm also very cognizant of a public hearing that took place just within the last 2 weeks in our area of Northeast Minnesota. And that was what were people thinking about what could be done with the Blatnik Bridge. And the costs, that estimate of how the Blatnik Bridge might, because of inflation, because of planning, because of so many things. For years now, we've known that the Blatnik Bridge was on the list, but we have never been able to talk about it. Director Hill, or engineer, district engineer of our MnDOT, comes into the office, and he's been reminding me for the last 4 visits at least that the Blatnik Bridge is going to be coming up. But when are we going to be able to really talk about the Blatnik Bridge as part of our next 5 years then? Is that in 26 or is that in 28? Or is it up into the 30s now? Because we saw the holes in the wall that the that Mr. Rodin showed us. And we are maintaining and fix it now, but how long can we fix it without having the plans? Now, he said $300 million is possible that it could be coming for the planning of the Blatnik Bridge. I didn't quite grasp that all, but that might be part of the federal monies that could be coming. But it was $1 billion that was mentioned in the newspaper article last week. And what happens to all the little programs before that? The little programs meaning 100 million, 500 million, 200 million, 30,000.
Commissioner Anderson Kelleher.
So, Mr. Chairman and Chair Murphy and members of the committee, there's no doubt that the Blatnik Bridge represents one of our most needed bridges with repair replacement. And the stage that we're in right now is that we are working to identify the best option available. And that's where you're seeing that really high cost estimate in terms of a potential replacement bridge. We can start to, as soon as that work is complete, and we are leading the project, we'll share the project with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, that we're then able to begin to assemble funds to be able to hit that goal that we will need to be able to be into the building of or replacement of a new Blatnik Bridge. And the, you know, really the earliest we could be into construction is 2026. It could even be 2028. But to get to that point, we do need to put together that package of funding. So one of the things that we will be looking at is how to be the most competitive by working with the state of Wisconsin to be able to bring home some of these federal bridge funds that are in the competitive program. And that is going to be a really important piece of the pie, because if we don't do that, if we're not successful at that, it will put tremendous pressure on our own state program and could really have an impact on, you know, what could be seen as the rest of the state bridge program for the rest of the state. And so we do look forward to, in this next 5 years, assembling, you know, hopefully a large portion, if not the entire portion of the funds for the project.
Representative Murphy, you have a follow-up.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you. Was this discussed on your trip to Washington in September? And also, is Wisconsin as enthusiastic about the building of this or repair of the Blatnik Bridge as I am?
Representative Murphy, I don't know if anyone could be as enthusiastic as you are about the Blatnik Bridge, but I will say Secretary Thompson and his team in Wisconsin and the legislators who serve the area on the other side of the bridge are very anxious to get this moving forward. And I think the other portion of this is our federal delegation is also very interested in the replacement of the Blatnik Bridge, repair or replacement of the Blatnik Bridge. I keep saying that because we are in the process of determining what is the best path forward. And for members' awareness, the inflation-adjusted planning estimate for this bridge, all total right now, is about $1.8 billion. We would share that cost with the state of Wisconsin. They have a little different process than we have for large projects. They have to get an appropriation for the particular authorization for the project, much as they did on the St. Croix project. And so I share that with you because they have a little bit different process than we use in Minnesota. We are leading the project. We haven't determined the delivery method yet of the project. Wisconsin now has the ability to participate in a design build process versus a standard delivery bid process. And so the other portion of this that I want to point out is that we do have a request before the governor for the capital investment bill coming forward, or his proposal coming forward, for $800 million in trunk highway capital bonds for bridges. And those bridge dollars could be used to match for a number of these bridge projects around the state to count as the state match.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
And thank you for your questions, Representative Murphy. So we have two more hands up before we transition to the Metropolitan Council. I'd like to first call on Representative Petersburg and then Representative Torkelson. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just going to be a just quick clarifying question that really originated during the NCSL presentation by Representative Hausmans and Erdahl in regards to matching funds. And I believe that one of the slides that Mr. Natarajan-Hubinger had indicated that we needed $168 million for matching funds. So I think the state has an estimate of that. I want to make sure that that's correct. And second of all, that is per year and not 5 years. So those are the two questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair, I can take that.
Okay, Mr. Natarajan-Hubinger.
Yep. So Representative Petersburg, on slide 11, probably the easiest summation of the state and local match needs. Again, all ballpark estimates. That's per year. So across all the formula and potential discretionary programs, almost $800 million of federal funds. And then the state and local match needs would be in that $185 million range. So that's $185 million state and local needs per year.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Representative Petersburg. And then Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity for a second question. A number of fund resources in these federal legislation are competitive grant style programs. Are we planning on aggressively pursuing those opportunities, and what resources are available to do that? And is it something a legislature should be thinking about to assist the department with making sure that we have a position where we can access those additional funds?
So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Torkelson, 100% enthusiastic about pursuing the competitive grant opportunities that are available. The way that, and what we have learned about these competitive grant programs over the last number of years, is they are most successful when states have identified often 50% of the funding for a project already. And so that could come through a number of different methods, including capital investment in terms of the bridge request as one idea. But the other part of that is the possibility of establishing some sort of fund that would include a mix of authorization of transportation funds and some general funds, because some of these programs we will not be able to use our historic transportation funding sources to be able to leverage them, based on just understanding of uses of transportation funds in the state. So we I think also will probably need some more general fund dollars available. And so maybe that's a fund that's set up by the legislature that MnDOT can then point to as we are applying for to be able to draw upon for particular projects or programs. I think it's going to be something that we really do need to work with you to think through and structure in such a way that it's both wise as well as available. Because that is the number one thing, as well as the strength of a project or program, is being able to have those resources at the ready.
Thank you for your question, Representative Torkelson. Members, I don't see, I'm going to just scan here one more time. I don't see any additional hands up for this section of our hearing. And I really appreciate Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, you and your team's thorough responses, really well-prepared presentation. You know, it is very clear that there is a lot to sift through here. And, you know, it's also clear to me after your presentation, there's a strong role for both the legislature and the executive branch in working through how we best access this money. And, you know, we look forward to working with you both before and during the legislative session coming up. So we appreciate this overview, and we'll certainly be talking to you a lot as we approach the session. So thank you, MnDOT. I'd now like to call on the Metropolitan Council. You know, as you know, MnDOT, of course, is responsible for roads, bridges, rural transit systems. The Metropolitan Council is, and I would say rural and greater Minnesota transit systems. Metropolitan Council will be responsible for transit in the metro area, which also includes the suburban transit systems as well. So an important role for the Metropolitan Council. I believe Mr. Shetman is on the line here.
I am here, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Shetman, welcome to both of our committees.
Yes,
good
great.
To see you, and look forward to your presentation.
Great. Well, first of all, I'd like to also extend my thanks to Mr. Hush and Commissioner Kelleher and Josh and Eric as well. I thought that they had excellent presentations and some useful information. I'm also happy to have the opportunity to have visited with Chair Lee and the Capital Investment Committee recently when we did a tour of the metro area, transit and other metro area projects that are under consideration for the bonding bill. And then to have the opportunity to see you, Representative Hornstein and Senator Dibble, along with Representative Elkins and Representative Kosnick at the opening of the of the Orange Line here just about 10 days ago.
And so you are the government affairs
yep.
director at the
MECA. Sure, thank you, Mr.
For those
Chair,
who don't know you. We everyone should know you, but for those who don't know you.
No, that's all fair. My name is Judd Shetnan. I'm the government affairs director for the Metropolitan Council. And Mr. Chair, I know I've mentioned this to your staff, and I know I've mentioned this to you and a number of the other folks who are on this meeting. Unfortunately, we don't have the depth of detail related to the transit aspects of the federal bill as much as there has been on the road and highway piece of this. So you're going to hear some duplication of what Mr. Rudin had in his letter or in his presentation, and also as Mr. Hush mentioned, that we're going to find more detail when the appropriations bills come out. That is one of the things that we are specifically waiting on to figure out in order for us to get some additional guidance on what this federal money will look like. And when we were actually at the Orange Line opening a couple weeks ago, FTA Region 5 Regional Administrator Kelly Brookins was there. And I know that you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kosnick and I all had a chance to visit with her. And one of the part of the conversation I had with her is that there is a an appetite for us to be able to share a little bit more detail about what these monumental transit investment dollars look like. She is well aware of that. She also has coverage over Illinois, Ohio, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and that is a something that she's hearing loud and clear. So I preface by saying that because the presentation I have is very slim in comparison to what we've seen from our partners at MnDOT and with our friend at the NCSL as well. So go ahead and John, if you want to move to the to that slide. As you guys have heard, obviously that the infrastructure investment and jobs bill has an historic investment in transit. Like we was mentioned before, nearly $90 billion in public transit over the five-year life of the bill, and that includes almost $40 billion in new transit funding. Go ahead, John. And what I can share here is some of the broader strokes that we know related to what the transit investments will look like in that bill. We know that $1.75 billion is for accessibility for handicap accessibility at transit stations. We know that $8 billion is going to be focused on capital investment grants to expand transit services to new and underserved communities. I think one of the finer points here that is really, really important for us in our region is that there's also an increase in the maximum cost for a small starts project move from $300 million to $400 million. Which makes a number of projects eligible under the Small Starts program by making that adjustment. And so that is something that I know that we want to make sure we get some additional detail on. It is possibly something that we could look at related to our arterial BRT investment that we are making and the state has been making in transit. So that is very exciting. And that is absolutely something when we get some additional information on that we certainly will want to share with Chair Lee and the Capital Investment Committee, as well as you, Chair Hornstein, and the House Transportation Committee, and also with our Senate partners as well. There's $5.75 billion to replace transit vehicles currently on the road with clean zero emission vehicles. This is consistent with a number of initiatives that we have going at the state. I know both chairs here are very interested in that. The Metropolitan Council is very interested in that. And so this bill, this federal infrastructure bill that leans into that will certainly make it easier for us to continue to move that that ball forward. I also think it's very exciting because the Met Council and our partners have also been investing in trying to look at clean fuel vehicles as well. And obviously we've done that with the C-Line, and we have that type of technology taking place here in Minnesota, up in St. Cloud and Crookston with our partners at the at New Flyer. And so that is very exciting. And as many people will recall, the Transportation Committee actually visited that site here. I believe it was in early 2019. So this, this federal investment here is really going to help move things along for us and could mean very good things for the state of Minnesota as well. There is a $4.75 billion set aside for the State of Good Repair Grants. This is also great. It just will help us be able to deal with some of the capital maintenance issues that we have in our system. And I'd like to add something that Representative Hornstein mentioned at the very beginning of our transition here to talk about Met Council issues, is that these dollars are for metro area transit, not just for metro transit. So it will include Metro Mobility. It will include the suburban transit providers. It will include Transit Link. And so I just want to make sure that I'm clear that this these investments, similar to what Mr. Rudin mentioned related to the federal, the MnDOT dollars, is that it's for Greater Minnesota and Greater Minnesota Transit. And when I talk about metro area transit, I'm talking about the entire transit enterprise here in the metro area. John, you want to go to the next slide for me? And so what's exciting here is that we're estimating to receive about $820 million in transit funding over the five-year span of this bill. And this is the part that I have a little less detail about that I wish I could share. I'm just not comfortable doing that at this point, but we don't have the detail regarding the programming amounts in those categories yet, and they are being developed. I checked with our folks in Washington just yesterday to see if there was any additional information I can share. Last I was told is that we expect to have the FTA is going to be having some webinars here soon that will hopefully, you know, allow us to get down to some of that detail that I know that you, Mr. Chair, Chair Hornstein, and you, Chair Lee, are very interested in understanding. And we are as much as you are as well. I just, I'm just not comfortable going much further than this because I just don't have that detail for you. But we do expect to have more of this information by the time the legislature convenes in early 2022. And I fully expect that we'll be able to share that information because it's obviously going to translate into many conversations about what we do with these IIJA dollars and what the state is choosing to do with the funds that they have available. So with that, I'm going to pause, and I'll be happy to take any questions that that members may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shetnin. And we have about 10 minutes left here before we adjourn. And so I'll take a question first from Vice Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Shetnin. That money you anticipate just going for capital and not able to use it for operating, correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Cagle, at this point, that is my understanding. We are very interested to see if there will be some flexibility in the use of those dollars. That is one of the things that we are waiting on. At this point, we see the eligibility basically along those categories with making accessibility for our transit stations, for state of good repair, for investment in clean fleet, and those types of investments.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. Do you have a follow-up? Okay, thank you very much. Let's see here. I don't see any additional hands up. Well,
thanks, Senator Dibble. Mike.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for letting the Senate barge into a House hearing. I was trying to kind of fly under the radar.
Both you and Chair Newman were House members, so you know you're very welcome here always.
So Mr. Shetnin, if you already discussed this and I missed it, my apologies. But I'm similar to the I'm interested in the similar analysis as we heard from MnDOT in what we think is going to flow to the Met Council on a, you know, a formula basis, and what's going to flow to the Met Council on a competitive grant basis. Now, I understand that transit funding is by its nature competitive grant making, because whenever we have an idea for the next BRT or LRT line, it has to meet muster, and it competes against other similarly situated initiatives around the country. But leaving that aside for the moment, like with the electric buses or some of the other initiatives that you described, do we know if any of that flows on a formula basis, or is it all going to be competitive grants?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I think that is an important distinction that you are asking for, and we will absolutely provide that to the House and Senate committees as soon as we have that information. I do not have that. I will say that I would expect that there would be a local match requirement. You know, similarly, as many folks know on this meeting, that we use our regional transit capital bonds in order to provide the match for the 80% federal share. I would expect that would be similarly along those lines of how, if there is a local match, which I expect that we would use those funds. But I can't tell you at this point how much of those are formula versus what would be competitive along those lines. But I would suspect that that a portion of them, if not all of them, in this particular category are probably formula. But we'll find out.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Okay, let me just last call here for questions for Mr. Shetnin. Okay, I don't see any. So I'm going to make a couple of just brief comments here and then hand it back over to Chairman Lee for his final thoughts. And first of all, just a big thank you to all the members from both committees and our senators for coming, our wonderful staff that helped prepare materials, both nonpartisan and partisan staffers. Thank you for your work. And as I mentioned, this is really just the beginning of a process we're going to be undertaking as legislators to really make sure that these dollars flow to Minnesota and that we are able to avail ourselves of this really, again, a historic generational opportunity. I look at this as an incredible opportunity to make a huge impact for future generations of Minnesotans in terms of improving our infrastructure and doing it in a way that, you know, acknowledges the moment we're in, fixing our crumbling infrastructure, but also looking at it through the lens of equity and climate, making sure that all parts of the state are covered and all modes of transportation are covered, and that we really, again, place an emphasis on safety, which has been mentioned as well. So I'm excited to do this work together, to do this work on a bipartisan basis, as was done in Washington, and really look forward again to 2022 and our committee work on this issue. We will be engaging the public, of course, as we always do, in a robust way. We want ideas from all corners of the state in terms of what priorities our constituents have for, again, this historic, generational, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to improve our infrastructure and, as Commissioner Anderson Kelleher said, improve people's lives in doing so. And with that, I will turn it over to Chairman Lee for his final thoughts and to gavel us home. Chairman Lee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. And again, thank you, members and our testifiers for coming in before the committee to present on just this one piece out of the larger infrastructure investment bill. Really look forward to, you know, having ongoing conversation, and for both committees, please look out for future notices of committee hearings. And then for capital investment, this may just be the start of several committee hearings that we will be partnering up with other House committees with jurisdiction over some of the budgetary items that are included in the bill, so that we could have a full picture of what we can do in the upcoming 22 session and a bonding bill. And with that, members, again, thank you very much for coming by. The joint hearing of the Capital Investment and Transportation Finance and Policy Committee is adjourned.